The whole idea was that, okay, 1.5% codes for DNA, and the rest is, a lot of it is flotsam and jetsam of millions of years of evolution, and this is just extra baggage, genetic baggage that we happen to be carrying around in our cells that don't currently have any use. But then those that are actually doing the research will say, whoa, but this does something. And then another paper comes out, this does something, another paper comes out. And then that percentage of junk DNA keeps shrinking.
Right.
And
but the, not on Wikipedia.
Welcome back to Darwin Denied. I'm Gordon Wilson. This is my brother, Pastor Douglas Wilson. And as you know, if you've seen other episodes, we are going through what we consider the essential bookshelf, at least according to us, about various books, either from the intelligent design camp or from the creationist camp or from the camp of disillusioned evolutionists who just realize that the data is not stacking up in their favor.
They don't have a new boat. They don't have a new boat, but their old boat sank.
They're
dog paddling.
Anyway, it's my turn to introduce a book. And it's another one by Jonathan Wells. He also wrote Icons of Evolution. He's written several others. This one is called The Myth of Junk DNA by Discovery Institute Press. And again, in his first book, Icons of Evolution, he didn't really cover this, but he, in this book, he sort of introduces it as the last icon of evolution. We're all used to the word, it's a household word now, we might not know much about it, but DNA is a household word. And you may have heard the phrase junk DNA, which is this notion that in our very large genome, large in the sense of information of just real basic biology, you've got in the nucleus of each cell a lot of DNA. And each letter, it's sort of a twisted ladder, and the genetic alphabet are in base pairs. Those are the rungs to the twisted ladder. And in our genome, there's over 3 billion base pairs. Now, that's a lot of base pairs to fit in a tiny nucleus, but there's, if you string it all out, that's about 6 feet of DNA in one tiny nucleus. Now, as research continued and they sequenced the whole genome, they found that about 1.5% of the genome meaning the total amount of DNA in the nucleus, 1.5% of it actually coded for proteins. Now, just a little background knowledge. I'm not trying to teach a biology class, but
yeah, just watch yourself.
You can try to straitjacket me. I want to just give you one little tidbit, tiny tidbit of knowledge. I talk about we all are familiar with DNA as being the blueprint, but what's it a blueprint for? And conventionally, in the early days of when DNA was discovered as the genetic material, and Watson and Crick figured out the three-dimensional structure of DNA and so on, in the 60s and 70s, they began to find out that DNA serves as a template to make RNA, and then RNA, the sequence of DNA codes for the sequence of RNA, and then protein is a different type of molecule than these two. These are both nucleic acids. The NA stands for nucleic acids. And protein really does the majority of the tasks of the cell. The proteins are a lot of the fact. If you think of the cell as a factory, the protein. The proteins are the factory workers, as well as a lot of the infrastructure, a lot of the what gives the cell shape, a lot of the machines. If you again go back to the factory, not only are the factory workers proteins, but a lot of the machinery and the I-beams and the forklifts and all of the machines that do their tasks are mostly protein. Now, they discovered that only 1.5% of the DNA codes for protein. So the idea started to arise, this notion that most of the DNA that did not, it's like, well, this is a blueprint for proteins, and since 98.5% doesn't code for proteins, it must, the vast majority of that must be junk. And that is a, the thing that Jonathan Wells wants to show in this book is that that notion is very false. With all of the empirical research that's been going on in the last couple decades, molecular biologists are curious. They want to know. They're not necessarily intelligent design people. They're not creationists. They're just molecular biologists, and they're trying to figure out how the cell works. And lo and behold, a lot of the DNA, yes, a lot of them, a huge percentage is called non-protein coding DNA, non-protein coding. 1.5% is protein coding. So what does that do? Well, they thought it was junk, and it turns out that a lot of it is actually made into RNA. Now, this process right here, DNA to RNA, one more big word.
Okay.
But actually, it's not a science word at all. It's science has used it. It's transcription. We use that word when we talk about scribes, biblical scribes. What's a I'll toss it to you. What's a biblical scribe do? Go ahead.
A biblical scribe writes.
Writes. And they what? They copy?
Oh, they copy the original text. So you copy one text and copy it to another.
Right. And it's usually the same language. So that's a
right.
The same. That's a scribe that does that. Well, they call this transcription, which is basically copying the DNA language into a RNA dialect. The same language, different dialect. And that's called transcription. But RNA to protein is called translation. Well, it turns out that a good chunk of the genome, the majority, well over 50%, and that number keeps rising, is actually transcribed. It just isn't translated. And they just thought, well, if it's not translated, it must be junk. Well, it's being transcribed. So there's all these RNAs. And why would the cell make all these RNAs, waste all sorts of cellular energy making RNAs that do nothing? I mean, that's just a big waste of energy to do that. Well, it turns out that
waste of taxpayers' dollars.
Yeah, well, of the cellular dollars. It is a waste of cellular ATP, the energy of the cell, and materials. So it turns out that a lot of research, many hundreds of researchers, probably, well, I'm sure in the thousands of researchers, papers are being published showing the functionality of this. And it turns out that a lot of these RNAs, I'm not going to go into any more detail than I already have, but a lot of these RNAs are involved in the regulation of the DNA, what gets translated, what doesn't get translated. They're involved in the regulation of it all. Because it just turns out that most of the genome, and you still do a Google search, say that 10 times real fast. Do a Google search on what percentage, and you'll get these really, what percentage of the genome is junk, and you'll still get these big, big, big numbers. And they're perpetuating this myth when they really should know better. And he goes through, it's not a thick book. I don't necessarily recommend it to those who have no you know, it gets into the, some of the details. He's a good writer, as I said, but it would be nice if you had a little bit of biology, and you're an apologetics junkie. That would be good. But he goes through and looks at, in a very systematic way, looks at all of the main functions of this non-protein coding, non-protein coding DNA.
So I have a question for you, then. It seems to me that the logical mistake is like a 16-year-old getting his driver's license,
mm-hmm.
and he gets behind the wheel of the car and he finds out what the steering wheel's for.
Right.
And having figured out that out, he then concludes that the rest of the dashboard is meaningless.
Right. Right. Or like the way I use my cell phone for just a half a dozen different things. Right. And it can do way more than that. But for me to say all of these funny little icons on my cell phone do nothing is absurd. It's absurd.
So the question. There's a question here. I know that there's a difference between scientists proper and popularizers.
Right.
Right. Or what a newspaper reporter might do. He interviewed a scientist, and then he garbles it. So.
Right.
Is this mistake being made at the scientific level?
Yes.
Is it popularizers messing it up?
Both. The people who should know better, some of them don't. Some of them do know better, but they're trying to also perpetuate this notion that it evolved. And their prediction was that it was junk. Now, a lot of them are backing away.
Because the junk would make it look like, well, see, it is an accident. It is a big junk.
Yeah, the whole idea was that, okay, 1.5% codes for DNA, and the rest is, a lot of it is flotsam and jetsam of millions of years of evolution, and this is just extra baggage, genetic baggage that we happen to be carrying around in our cells that don't currently have any use. But then those that are actually doing the research will say, whoa, but this does something. And then another paper comes out. This does something. Another paper comes out, and then that percentage of junk DNA keeps shrinking.
Right.
And
but not on Wikipedia.
Well, if you dig, you'll find it. It's like a lot of these papers that are written about the functionality of all of this junk DNA are written by dyed-in-the-wool evolutionists. And they're not going to back, like the paradigm shift thing, they're not backing away from the idea of evolution. So some of them have sort of had a knee-jerk reaction because some people who are critical of Jonathan Wells will say, go to the people who did the study and say, you found functional DNA and what we thought was junk. Are you an ID person? Oh, no. How dare you imply that mm-hmm. I'm an ID guy or a creationist? I'm just doing science, and yes, it's functional, but that doesn't mean I'm backing away from the notion that it is that evolution is absolutely true. But what they have to do is just sort of reposition themselves. And again, going back to the paradigm shift, they have to back away from their earlier claim that this is all flotsam and jetsam.
Is it by flotsam and jetsam? Do you mean the junk DNA? Is the junk DNA supposed to be vestigial stuff used to code for something?
Maybe used to code for something, but now in the evolutionary
is any of it pre-code material? Like these are the letters jumbling around and...
It might be pre-code, but they'll say right now it's just lying sort of dormant.
Okay.
Well, it's not dormant. It's being transcribed, just not translated. But they thought it was sort of dormant. And there are a number of different things that it's not just all RNAs. There are sections of this junk DNA that are called long interspersed nuclear elements, called lines. It's a nice little acronym. And then there's short interspersed nuclear elements. Those are signs. And those have a number of functions. Then another section is called ERVs, called endogenous retroviruses. And they were called endogenous retroviruses because they thought these were snippets of our virus DNA that was now incorporated into our genome and we're just sitting around. But it turns out that those...
A cold that a Neanderthal got. That's a Neanderthal cold right there.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they'll say. But now that's being called into question because these supposed viral DNAs that are sort of in there are doing some very important physiological functions. So this book, I'm not going to try to summarize the whole book, but he does go into a lot of the functions of this supposed junk DNA. So he's not saying that all of it's, he's not saying that all of it's
functional.
There may indeed be junk DNA, but that goes back to we live in a fallen world. There's right. been mutations, and maybe that's one of the reasons going back, we haven't hit that book yet, Genetic Entropy.
Yeah.
But the fact that our genome starts to accumulate mutations and may actually cause certain genes that used to be functional to be non-functional. So there's that possibility that there's some junk DNA, but that doesn't mean that it was always junk. And it also means that as we keep on studying the genome, this was written in 2011. Since 2011, there have been many more discoveries. So again, that number, that percentage that is unaccounted for, that's mm-hmm. like, well, is it junk? Is it not junk? Keep finding more functions for it.
What about the assumption? Does he go into, and if he doesn't, then it's probably not the time to bring it up here. But there's also an assumption that everything is done by the genome.
Right.
Yeah.
If
it's not in the genome, then it's not happening in right. terms of how a person right. turns out. But
yeah,
what basis
we think
do we, have
we
for
sometimes
saying
that? Think that the actual DNA codes for everything, and it turns out that that's not true. Oh, one other point that and I hopefully yeah. I'll get back if I go yeah. on a tangent too All long, right. Raymond back in. But some realize they're finding that some of the functionality is sequence specific. In other words, the sequence is important in this non-protein coding DNA. The sequence is important. Sometimes the sequence is not important. This is just a loose analogy, but we sometimes think that the information in this book is only the text. But if you were a person responsible for layout of the text of the book, and you had to pick font size and font type and margin size, how big are the paragraph breaks? If you looked at all of that in terms of computer code, margins are information.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, it's not information in the sense of, well, it's not communicating to me anything, but it's information. The margins were put there for a reason. Mm-hmm. And the order in which the chapters are arranged, I mean, yeah. we could rearrange all these chapters, and in a book like this, it may still make sense. But like in a novel, if you rearrange the chapters, it would be very problematic.
Except one time I was in the Navy, we were at sea on the submarine, and they had movies that they showed, and there was one movie that was so bad that they showed the reels in the wrong order. They got mixed up, and nobody could tell.
Right.
So what you're saying is generally true.
Yeah, right. So there's all sorts of information. The other old notion was that a gene was a section of DNA, a segment of DNA in this long string that codes for a particular protein. But now they're this is, by the way, that I showed you is called the central dogma. Now, this was sort of unveiled back in the early 70s, and this was sort of considered like the Trinity is to Christianity, right, what this is to cell biology. Now they're realizing that it's not like this isn't true.
It's simplistic, though.
It's simplistic. There's so much more. One gene doesn't always... in some cases, one gene codes for one protein, but in many cases, the gene is interrupted. It's a section of DNA that can code for hundreds, if not thousands, of proteins. And how do you get thousands or hundreds of proteins from one section of DNA? Well, you've got these, that whole segment is made of introns, which actually are informational and code for the protein. And I'm sorry, the exons code for the protein and the introns don't. So they're interspersed. Think of it as a movie. You've got the uncut version, and the uncut version is like the ridiculously long Lord of the Rings. And you see all of it and you go through a lot of bags of popcorn. The cut version is that they take out all of what they consider extraneous, not super important for the plot. And you can take it out and then splice it back together and remove those scenes. Well, genes are like that, but the way you can get a whole bunch of different proteins is by taking out those introns and taking the remaining sections and splicing them together in all sorts of different ways. So it would be like saying, here's your uncut Lord of the Rings, and by differential editing, we can make over 100 different movies. So it's totally different movies with totally different plots.
It's like a sentence, and you read the sentence and it means something, and then you jump into the second word from the last and read it backwards for five words, and it's a sentence.
Right, that's a palette. That's sort of a palette where it's the information going the other way. But let's just say we're reading it this way.
Okay.
It's basically taking out certain words and splicing the sentence together and coming up with a different sentence, or taking out these words and splicing it together and coming up with a different sentence. So you can pack a lot more information into. These were just loose analogies, but you can pack a lot more information by differential splicing of that gene.
And so since when you're cutting a movie, you're actually taking that section out. In this, it would be just ignore these, like ignoring every third word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then read that sentence, and then ignore every fifth word and read that sentence.
Is it The introns are, I think, I'm not sure, but the introns are the ones that are always taken out. But
physically taken out?
Yeah, they're physically snipped out.
Okay. Oh,
because you've got these little scissors. I mean, it's like editing an old film. Okay.
Oh, it is like editing a film. It's not.
It really is like editing a film. You snip out certain sections and then splice them together again.
You know, Gordon, evolution is not possible.
Well, the thing is, it's getting worse and worse and worse. But like with the paradigm shift, the bricks keep go loading on the wagon. But they're so committed to the theory that even if we show that 95% of this genome is functional, they would be hard. They're not going to go down. And say, oh, you're right. You creationists, you ID people are right. They're going to fight tooth and nail to the very last bit.
So again, the thing that threw me on this is if you're actually snipping, if they're
They're not little scissors.
Yeah.
But close.
They're a little mechanism that takes
things
out.
There's enzymes. They're enzymes that snip the... well, in this case, they make the transcript of RNA, and then that's the uncut RNA, and then they have enzymes that snip out certain sections.
All right, so I guess once you've done that, can you come back to that thing that had all the stuff snipped out and read it again? Is it only read once? Is it only edited once?
Well, it's edited once, and then it goes to be made into a protein. It can be read a number of times, but RNA usually is pretty short-lived, and it gets eaten up by the cell. And then if you want to make another of that protein, you have to transcribe back to
the DNA.
Back to the DNA.
I got it.
Think of the DNA as what's on your file in your computer. Pulling it up on the screen is your RNA, and then sending it to the printer is your protein.
Okay, and then once you hack up the RNA and get what you want out of it, you go back. You need it, if you want to do it again, you go replicate again, transcribe again from the DNA.
Right,
and now you got a fresh one that's identical to the one you had there previously.
Right, but you might be edited different this time.
Right,
and depending on all the signals in the cell, this is just. We keep on, and these scientists, the Darwinists, the actual evolutionists, are the ones that are actually doing most of the unveiling of the complexity. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that are just, it's showing, we were convinced, let me just, I like examples, but you could show somebody this pocket knife and go, okay, obviously that's designed. And then that was our old notion of the genome is like, okay, yeah, that's designed, obviously. But now we're realizing it's much more complex. Not that my iPhone can cut anything. Bad analogy.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there are some iPhones that actually have a little knife. I don't know. This is designed, obviously, and your believer will say, of course that's designed. The cell's designed. Even in the old 1950s notion of the cell. Now we keep finding complexities that blow the mind, and they're found out by evolutionists, and they still won't say uncle. They still won't give it up. They are convinced that naturalism can do all of this amazing stuff. And I realized, and that's my question for you, it really seems to be a stubborn adherence to a philosophy that it doesn't matter how we think that if we can find something complex enough, they'll go, oh, what must I do to be saved? And it's not like that. You can show them complexity after complexity and palindromes and overlapping genes and all of these mechanisms and everything scurrying around to make the most sophisticated factory look very primitive. You know, sophisticated man-made factories seem very primitive compared to what's going on in terms of information, storage information, processing in the cell. Blows the mind. And yet these people... stubbornly adhere to this idea that it all happened without any guidance whatsoever.
I forget who said this, but
I'm just out of patience.
So someone once said very insightfully, it's impossible to persuade someone of the truth of something if his livelihood depends upon him not understanding you. it's impossible to make someone understand you when his mortgage, his family, his job, his career,
mm-hmm.
All rides on him not getting what you're saying.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Because if they say you're right,
jump on that hand grenade.
Yeah. And yeah. It really is that they've got, I shouldn't be totally, I understand all of the pressures to stick with the herd because. Yeah. You could lose your job. You can lose if you're like, oh, well, my research has shown that this idea that, you know, this junk DNA notion is really it's a myth. It really is a myth. But if they said, well, that seems to indicate that this was all design, I mean, then you're really putting your chopping block.
Then you're in trouble.
Then you're in big trouble. So but there are some scientists that seem to like go where they're much more humble about it, and they go where the data, where it's like, oh, and come what may, they just like, okay, I guess I'll lose my job.
Yeah.
They may fight it, you know, as they can, but my hope is that just more and more people come into grad school, or we have our own grad schools in the
future.
Can really make this ship sink, the evolution ship. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you.
Cult Conference challenges Christian high school students to become the next generation of cultural leaders. Talks given throughout the week encourage high school students to put on the whole armor of God, engage culture, and advance the kingdom in all areas of life. Check out this year's Cult Conference by visiting calledconference.ninja. That's this summer, July 15th to the 20th, here in Moscow, Idaho. Sign up today at calledconference.ninja.